That's a pretty good badass.
Do you mean to say, Lee, that in this case it's a defense if a better has bet $20,000?
I frankly do not see.
And they and he has nothing but the tickets that he bought.
I'd be surprised if it was, say, that it's legal. And that's what you're saying, that it's legal to engage in the numbers game. It seems to me this is one of the major profit areas. Cost of business, whatever it is. I find no social redeeming factor for this operation, and I can't see why we want to legalize either side of it.
I could quite possibly buy it if we hadn't already legalized all sexual acts between consenting adults.
Then why don't we legalize the promotion of this game?
We've consistently throughout this thing made the conduct of the bottom guy, the guy who bets his quarter or his dime or his $50 or his $100, not subject to penalty or subject to very small penalty, with the idea that the guy who benefited from it, whether from obscenity or drugs or sex or whatever it is, bear the brunt of it. And I think that's what he's done. This is what I believe.
You get this guy, and he's got a few tickets on him, $10,000.
And can persuade a jury that those are in fact his own, and he bet his own money to that extent.
Just a moment.
Be a little bit difficult in most cases.
I don't see why you want to. Okay.
Tony,
you can find
no
reason
to
want to sanction the
numbers.
Well, sanction some other
things. I'm with you now.
Mr. Chairman.
Don Clark.
Was this considered the fact that somebody with a layoff bet might have a defense on the basis that it was his bet? You see, there's up above, at a higher level, as they take the money and the guy goes over to another one.
Yeah, but the layoff
$30,000.
The layoff bet is never represented by a slip. The layoff bet is represented by a, that's when you take a hell of a chunk of money on a fundraiser and you begin to get scary. So you buy insurance by putting the thing off of another bigger bookie.
Let me ask you.
Are never represented by slips of paper. Don, those are phone calls between two independent entrepreneurs, one operating here and one in St. Louis, which is a good place for cheap lots of
money. Where I disagree with you, Bob, I think we have generally acknowledged that the Friday night poker game in somebody's home is socially accepted. I think most of us here would have. I find a great social evil in the numbers game, and I think we've got to do everything we can to discourage it.
Well, my point apparently is that it's okay to be thoughtful for me and the best.
You're saying to the people that market from these guys, from these guys, go ahead, buy all you can.
The guy who bets his dime out to him or his quarter, and
he'll
rarely get over a dollar. To him, this is his Friday night social poker game. This is the same as the age-old arguments we have in Bend, Oregon, and Ontario, and places like that, that you can go to the Elks Club and get smashed, but you go into
the
Waldorf bar and walk outside, you go to the hokey.
But the Friday night poker game is something that is... I can promote a Friday night poker game.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
I fully promote it and everything else, and nobody thinks that either I'm evil or the players that are in it. You're talking here about the numbers game, which is a definite.
But I'm not talking about. I'm talking about it at the lowest level. This is the whether it's the high school kid who takes his lunch money.
The point is, we've got to say to these people, there's a big difference.
But you're never going to persuade them.
Yeah, but by you are not. You've got to apply a sanction against it. Lee, first, isn't it correct, Don, that under Section 4, even the fellow who buys one ticket for 10 cents and it's in his possession, he's guilty of possession of gambling records in the second degree. Is that correct?
No.
Well, he's got a defense.
No, he's got a defense.
Well,
under Section
forgetting 6. Forgetting the defense for a moment.
All right, yes.
That's correct, isn't it? And,
well, without the defense, yeah.
Yes, without the defense.
But he's not without a defense.
And Section 5 makes it a crime in the first degree if they represent five bets totaling more than $500. And then we come to Section 6 and say, despite the fact that these are offenses in the first and second degree, nevertheless, if a defendant is found who has in his possession only the chances or the numbers that he purchased with his own money, that constitutes a defense.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a defense as to either first degree or second degree.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct? And that's the part that you're objecting to.
Half of first degree.
Half.
Why don't you move?
Yeah.
Half of first degree.
Yeah, half of first degree.
Now, could you get around Lee's objection by putting a dollar limit on the defense?
No. Lee's objection, as I understand it, is that we're cultivating a market for the big shot guy who wants to come and sell a whole hell of a lot of these things to some poor son of a bitch for 10 cents a piece.
But he expressed it by saying a guy can have 10,000 or 50,000 or so of slips, dollars representing slips in his pocket, and have an absolute defense if he can persuade a jury that this is his own money representing his own bets. What if we say that anything up to $200?
I don't see why you're trying to protect
50 or 10.
You're not, look, as a practical matter, they aren't going to prosecute the guy with one ticket with two bits. Don?
Mr. Chairman,
but it is a matter, I think you do have to, we've got to have the power to, and it seems to me you are creating a defense that everybody's going to try to use. And in this area of the numbers game, I think here we should be playing. Well, why don't you move to delete sub 1 of Section 6?
Yes.
All right, under discussion.
Don Clark. That the same issue is here, including the involvement of organized crime, that is there when we're talking about those people who are the clientele of an organized prostitution ring, and yet we chose not to prosecute those people.
The clientele,
that's right. And prostitution on an organized basis contributes to organized crime.
Right,
money,
now,
money.
Anybody, if you read about the Costa Nostra and all these, the general, this is their major form of income.
That's true.
They're mostly out of the prostitution business. And I think they're a tremendous threat. I didn't want to invite them. Do anything, you want to encourage anyone coming to this state. All right, the motion is sub 1 of Section 6 be deleted. Is there a call for the question?
Where's the question?
Call the roll.
Judge Burns.
No.
Senator Burns.
Aye.
Chandler.
Aye.
Clark.
No.
Johnson.
Aye.
Knight.
He would say aye, I think.
Frank!
Baldwin.
Aye.
Mr. Chairman.
Aye. Carry. Now, how about sub 2 of Section 6?
Okay.
Change that to delete the 2 in parentheses.
In any prosecution,
is there
a defense right? Is that what the jury is going to hit it with?
In other words, you need it because otherwise Section 4 would make you guilty of an innocent possession of some
people. Four proper numbers on it.
And some of these aren't going to be easily identified. Some of these records, it's going to be difficult to tell what they are.
Mm-hmm. Is there a motion to approve sub 2 of Section 6?
I'm going to be on the bailing side once. I'll move.
Senator moves. What's your name? Burns moves to approve sub 2 of Section 6. All those in favor say aye.
I don't
know what you
have. Amenders. All in favor say
aye.
Someone moves that we approve Sections 4 and 5.
I move that we approve Sections 4 and 5.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carry.
No.
Carry. Section 7.
My name is Sunday.
Okay, section 7 deals with possession of a gambling device. And it covers, first of all, he has to have knowledge of the character of the device. Prohibits manufacturing, selling, transporting, placing, or possessing, or conducting or negotiating a transaction affecting or designed to affect ownership, custody, or use of one, a slot machine, or any other gambling device, believing that the device is to be used in the event of unlawful gambling activity.
Now, what's any other gambling device?
We've defined these terms. Gambling device means any device, machine, paraphernalia, or equipment that is used or useful in the playing phase of any gambling activity, whether that activity consists of gambling between persons or gambling by a person involving the playing of the machine. Lottery tickets, policy slips, and other items used in the playing phase of lottery and policy schemes are not gambling devices within this definition. And the reason is, of course, we have the discovery elsewhere.
Okay. I got one point.
I think this is fine.
Now, we've also defined slot machines, too.
I know you can answer that.
On page 4.
Judge Burns made the point about it being ridiculous for the police to send these PhDs out to drink nickel beer to make these pinches. I think that, I'm not going to argue strenuously for it because I don't think there's any great sentiment to do it. But I say that if we ban pinball machines per se, like they're banned in the city of Portland, as we ban slot machines, you would have to have these cops out and recover, spend all this money doing these silly things. And I think they have every bit as much a basic influence as slot machines. Just witness the difference between the city and the county in one moment. But
this is
otherwise, as this is, it's good, huh?
Pinballs are covered under this.
No, they're not. Just
oh, yeah.
No, they're not.
I understand they are, and I specifically asked you that, didn't I, Don?
Yes, you did.
Are pinball machines
number
covered
two.
Under this?
Sub 2.
Where?
Any other gambling device.
Oh, yeah, but
to be used in
pinball machine, which doesn't have a payoff slot on it, is presumed to be legal.
Go back to definitions, though.
If it doesn't have a kick shoot on it,
it doesn't have
it's
to.
Okay.
We got pipe top, you can go back to definitions. Burns, you want to go to commentary.
Entertainment or a privilege of playing at a game or scheme without.
Yeah.
Section 11. Indirectly contemplate transfer of money or property or of any interest therein or involving extension of a service, entertainment, or a privilege of playing at a game or scheme without charge.
They're covered.
Are you?
Regain.
This would ban pinball machines per se without proving that.
Yeah, I had the same concern, and he told me, is McKee versus Foster?
Right.
It's covered.
That's the one that said they were okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. McKee versus Foster said that if it's a free play, it's not prohibited.
And,
and our intent, what our intent
what it doesn't prohibit, it would prohibit though, if Jim and I go into a
was that
tavern,
the subcommittee's
and play the machine and you
gamble.
Yes. Between us. That's
no, yeah, that's illegal.
That's just like Friday night card. Right?
No.
Or the am I clear in my understanding here?
No,
yeah, that's right. You and Jim can run the bar. And you can run up 5,000 points the first game, and you bet him a dollar that he can't beat you, and he can run up 5,500, and you can pass the money, and it's okay. But if you go in and play the thing, and the bartender pays you off for the free games or something like that, then there's no good.
All right, so this perpetuates the existing statutory law with respect to pinball machines.
No, it adds something to it. It adds the free game payoff.
The intent was, and maybe we haven't accomplished that. Our definitions I thought we had, but the intent was to prohibit the free play device. Yes, that was
to prohibit it. So if I go into a tavern in Spray, Oregon, like I did last week, and there's a pinball machine there, that's illegal.
No, no,
free play is
yeah. It's a free
you can play it for your own amusement as
right.
Long as you don't the house doesn't pay you off for free
games. All right, so that perpetuates the present law.
No.
Yeah.
Wait. It's illegal if it even picks
those
games up there.
To even have them out. It's illegal to even have a slot machine out.
Slot machine.
All right. And I'm saying if you extend the law that far as pinball machines, make it illegal per se.
And Don says that
doesn't make a pinball. It doesn't make a pinball machine illegal that doesn't have any kind of free play mechanism.
I say that's what we should do, and that's what I understand Don to say that we have.
I was saying that
involving the extension of a service, entertainment, or a privilege of playing a game.
If you have a pinball machine that you put a nickel in and you play a game, that's it. That's all you do, and that's all you get is what you pay for. Fine, it's not prohibited. But the intent of this draft was to prohibit the ones that do give you free games.
That's right.
Where you can reach a certain score, you get a free game.
That's perfectly okay for Johnson and Burns to go in there and bet two bits on the outcome of these games, as long as the house isn't involved by giving one of them free games, paying off for free games at the end of them.
You know, Mr. Chairman, one of the big things they've done in this industry is figured out ways to beat you, and I've just figured out the way to beat you already. And all I do is just have have my score ring up there. And if my score is 1,000, they can pay me off a dollar. If my score is 2,000, they can pay me off $2. So come on.
That's illegal under this.
Pay off on
this. That's illegal under this.
Anything you buy it.
I understand that, but John is trying to get at these machines. As long as they're there, they're going to be used for gambling, and I think he's right.
Well, as long as you have a deck of cards, they're going to be used for gambling.
Right, well, let's have slot machines.
Two cards.
There's some fun.
Two horses.
Why not?
McKee versus Foster, and they say that if there's any absurdity in the law, which per se prohibits, if there's any absurdity, it rests in the law and not in court. Justice Rossman's more colorful.
A frequent observation by
the
appellate court.
What he's talking about is the happenstance where we say that a slot machine per se is illegal, a pinball machine per se is not.
No, wait a minute.
Yeah.
John, what you're saying here is you're saying this is it's illegal for the house to permit a card game to go on and take a consideration out of it.
Right.
And the same, but it's not illegal for the house to let me and Chandler carry on a card game
and buy an occasional beer from the house.
Right.
And buy an occasional beer from the house and trade money between the two of us. Yeah. And likewise, with a pinball machine, it's illegal for the house to take anything off that pinball machine.
Other than that one nickel that you put in for that
they
one
can wrench you the machine.
That's what
period.
We're saying here.
Yeah.
Yes, that's what this does. All right, I understand.
The house can wrench you the machine, period, but it can't gamble with you on it.
And
we can gamble between ourselves, but the house can't be
right.
Well, why don't you have a slot machine do the same thing then?
Yeah, why don't we do the same?
Why don't we legalize the slot machine the same way too then?
Because I don't think most people would want to play slot machines.
You know, I'll bet you a nickel I get three lemons next time.
You what?
I'll bet you a nickel I get three lemons next time. No, you bet I get two bells in a bar.
There really is, in fact, if anything, a pinball machine is more of a gambling device than a slot machine. And you can put money into the multiple odds pinball machine faster than you put it in a one-armed bandit. And we've experimented to do that in Multnomah County. And it eats money faster than the one-armed bandit does.
Yeah, Rufus King points out the same thing.
Yeah, this is fine, but if you've limited the house's ability to pay off, if you've got it down to the point where just you and Johnson...
Well, the only way you do that, Bob,
well,
is by putting an undercard.
Why are you
going to
put the multiple odds in then?
You put an undercard.
I don't want to. They put them in. John, do you think it's wrong?
Yeah, I think it's
wrong. Well, do you think it's wrong for me as a private citizen to keep a pinball machine in my house?
It isn't wrong for you as a private citizen to keep a slot machine in your house, is it?
No.
Yeah, it is.
Yes, it is. It's counterfeit per se.
I see no difference.
Possession of a gambling device.
I see no difference between the two from a gambling
device.
Right, because in a practical matter, they're both syndicated.
Why don't we eliminate cards?
Well, you've got a different concept
so
there.
The Valley Corporation, manufacturers both on the Valley Corporation, we trace right back to the old, what's-his-face gang, Chicago, the phone gang.
Well, Don, let me ask you a question then. What do you think should be done?
I think the pinball machines and slot machines both should be banned per se. Well, a good pinball machine in a tavern can gross $3,000 a month.
But how's it going to gross $3,000 to the...
Because they use them for gambling, and the only way that you're going to effectively enforce the gambling that goes on with those is to have an undercover policeman in every tavern.
What you may want to do is prohibit any consideration for playing the game.
As long as you let them have the goddamn machines, they're going to cheat.
That's right.
That's right.
That's what's the matter with them. They lend themselves.
They lend themselves to us.
By their very nature.
They are a gambling license. We're supposed to do dice.
Yeah. Nickels, too. So do dollars.
Yeah.
But they are not.
That's not their sole purpose.
Yeah, they're not.
Dice?
Controlled
no.
by.
Nickels and
dollars. Well, hasn't the federal government gone to the extent of prohibiting the transfer of these machines across state lines?
Not slot machines.
I think pinball machines.
Slot machines and pinball machines.
My understanding they've increased in value.
Promoted by the wrong element of people that are not yet promoting dice and cards and making money out of them.
Well, I would move, Mr. Chairman, that we amend Section 7 to that of make a new subsection. It would be a slot machine or two, a pinball machine or three. Other gambling spots. Well, recognizing probably
failed
at Indian.
Well, I am.
Don?
Well, the intent of these definitions was to include the pinball machine. And I wanted to double check here to make sure we, because that was clearly the intent of the draft and the intent of the subcommittee was to include pinball machines within our definitions. Now, maybe.
The definition makes a pinball machine a gambling device per se, even though it doesn't have a payoff system.
There's a slot
machine.
Is that what you're saying, Doc?
Only if it expenses free games.
Well, it makes it illegal and it pays off in any way.
Well,
I can have a pinball machine in my tavern, and all I have to do is, instead of having that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I got an older machine, a little bit, minor alteration, and now it says it rings up in 100,000s, my score. Same thing. Still got my payoff.
Don, let's wait a minute until Don checks this.
Why not? What? Well, I just change it from 1 to 100,000s, and I see that's the score now. That's not three games.
That's what I'm coming in with.
$1 million
without one nickel.
Well, I think you're
going to
get.
You
must put dice illegal because you know, darling.
All right, why not slots? You want to legalize slots? All right, no pay slots. We've got them. They're electronic slots.
Well, I think the difference really is the fact that these devices, both pinball and slot machines, are generally owned and controlled by syndicated types of people and organizations that traffic in other areas of crime. Now, this isn't true with respect to the dispensing of cards or with respect to the dispensing of dice.
Legitimate social use of a pinball machine other than using his hand
device. I tell you, frankly, I prosecuted 79 pinball games, and I got sick and tired of listening to the judges in Multnomah County criticize the sheriff's office for wasting all their time drinking beer and spending money investigating this when they should be doing other things.
How about
but that's the only way?
From Minnesota.
But that's the only way they were going to do
well,
it.
I wish you'd be accurate. I didn't say he was a PhD. I said he had a master's.
Well, yeah, but you weren't one of those judges then. May I ask this? Does this? How about machines where you shoot at a duck? Ducks are all lined up, and this doesn't include those. That isn't a pinball machine.
No, the Ontario Ops Club is safe. That's the guy over there. Bing, 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 bing.
Do they have one there?
They did.
I've seen them in the bus depot.
Yeah.
Last time I was over there, they had a hell of a lot more than that.
Why not abolish pinball machines? We can have duck shooting alleys. And
well, because I maintain that the element that's involving yourself, you got that time to gamble. It's even more disturbing than it seems to be. That's going to go on. And you think that covers it?
Or okay.
The pinball machine will be something else.
Yeah.
Well, let's take a vote on this. There seems to be a split of opinion.
Don's got something to say.
All right, Don.
Well, now, this language, our definitions, included, came from the Michigan draft. Now, the Michigan possession of a gambling device is the same as ours, and they cover a slot machine or any other gambling device. Now, their commentary says, pinball machines continue to be covered because gambling device, as they've defined it, which is also the way we've defined it, refers to gambling activity. And gambling activity turns on the possibility of receiving something of value defined to include free plays. Now, something of value, the way we've defined it is the same as Michigan's. So it's intended to include free plays, which
and it does,
which does pick up, at least that's maybe it's a roundabout way of doing it, but is intended to cover free play pinball machines. No question about it. So if you if that's the effect of it, which is certainly the intent. We're trying to do. And possession of a pinball machine is prohibited under our section on possessing a gambling device because a pinball machine would come under subsection 2 any other gambling device.
When somebody moves so section 7 be approved.
So moved.
You heard the motion.
But
so long as it involves free play.
Yeah, or payoffs.
Or payoffs.
What if it didn't?
What is the motion?
The motion is to approve section 7. Is there a call for the question? We've discussed it enough, I think.
But there's no...
Call the roll.
Judge Burns?
No.
Senator Burns?
Pays off any.
Aye.
Clark?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Knight?
Aye.
Pauling?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye.
Well, I've changed your vote.
See, that wasn't
right down the Pauling side.
Section 8.
Oh, 45 minutes of discussion to get that margin of vote.
I don't know any other way to plan a pinball machine is the problem.
I don't either.
Did you get a
section 8, would you please start up?
Yes, okay. Prime page 8. And what this is for is to give you some means of establishing the occurrence of an event, if that's the type of case you have where it involves gambling, say, on a horse race that occurred in the state of California. Or a football game or a basketball game, this type of thing. A report, a published report of this occurrence is prima facie evidence of the event. And two, evidence that a description of some aspect of the event was written, printed, or otherwise noted at the place in which a violation of this article is alleged to have been committed.
In other words, that it's a prima facie evidence that the event occurred if somebody puts it in his goddamn newspaper that it did occur.
Or if there's a poster.
Right here.
Or if there's a poster on the place that says it did occur.
Football game, you saw the football game actually.
I move the adoption section 8.
You've heard the motion, any discussion?
Just two questions.
Call the roll.
Judge Burns.
Aye.
Senator Burns?
Aye.
Chandler?
Aye.
Clark. Johnson.
Aye.
Knight.
Aye.
Spalding.
Aye.
Mr. Chairman.
Aye.
Section 9.
Section 9 relates to forfeiture of prizes. It continues existing law. And the language of subsection 2, those chapters are abatement proceedings is to abate nuisances. This is existing statutory language that we've retained.
I move we adopt section 9.
Call the question. Call the roll on section 9.
Judge Burns.
Aye.
Sandra Burns. Chandler.
Aye.
Clark.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Knight.
Aye.
Spalding.
Aye.
Mr. Chairman.
Aye. Section 10.
All right, seizure and destruction of slot machines. As Commodore indicates, it's a slightly modified version of 167.540. The subcommittee amended subsection 2 so that it now reads, whenever it appears to the court the gambling device has been possessed in violation of this article, the court shall adjudge forfeiture thereof, shall order the sheriff to destroy the device, and to deliver any coins taken therefrom to the county treasurer, who shall deposit them to the general fund of the county. It was really an amendment to make it clear that this went to the county.
Mr. Chairman, what about the pinball machine? Do you seize and destroy those?
Well, it's a gambling device.
The reason I ask that, you say slot machine is a public nuisance, and then it says shall seize any such gambling device. Yeah. Now, does that refer to slot machine, or does it refer back to
a slot machine as the time?
Under our definition, pinball machine comes within the definition of a slot machine.
No. I didn't think so.
Maybe.
No, I think this confines the seizure to the slot machine.
Chairman, I would pinball move subsection 1 be amended to read a slot machine
or other gambling device.
It could also be considered
as prescribed
by section 7.
That's a good point. I don't think as drafted it does cover our
or other gambling device as defined in subsection 2 of section 7.
Why does it necessarily have to be in possession of the person violating provisions of the statute? What if you find a slot machine and nobody's possessing it? Or you can't
prove it's possessed. We should refer to the definition of statutes and not to subsection 207.
My point would be to strike out found in possession of any person violating the provisions.
It's going to be in some way.
How do you know?
A gambling device is defined in the statute is not necessarily illegal.
But a slot machine is.
Well, it is under section 7, not under the definition section.
I think the point is well taken. Why do we have to prove this in anybody's possession?
I don't think we should have to.
Both ways. Portion starting with the comma after thereof and ending with the comma after article. So I'd read the part thereof and hold it subject to the order of the board.
You've heard the motion. Any discussion?
Well, what was that?
The sentence would now read, the sheriff shall summarily seize any such gambling device or operating part thereof and hold it subject to the order of the court having jurisdiction.
Go on. The other thing is, are we also amending the after a slot machine is defined in subsection 10 of section 1?
Or other gambling device as described outwards or as defined where?
Subsection 2.
He says subsection 2, subsection 7, but that doesn't make sense.
Well, here's the problem.
In order to destroy it, you have to prove that the guy that had a belief that the device was to be used in advancement of an unlawful gambling before you could destroy it.
But this is the problem. A gambling device is defined back in Section 1 can include practically anything.
Right, now where we create this problem from, you see, we've just picked up existing statutory language with respect to slots, destruction of slots, and they use such device, whereas we have defined gambling device to have a specific meaning. So,
pick up a wheel in the church social.
Are you ready for the motion?
I think it is covered. Slot machine as defined in 10 and carried on 11, we've never been pinball machine.
I think that's what I said earlier, and I think that definition of 10, sub 10, and 11 covers a pinball machine. Yeah. That's exactly where it is.
Why are you saying?
Back to the definition.
A slot machine or pinball machine as defined in subsections 10 or 11.
Pinball machine.
Pinball machine isn't defined.
Unless the slot machine
Jim, I think what should be done, going back to definition, sub 10, define slot machine and pinball machine in the same deal, in sub 10, but the slot machine or in enclosed pinball machine means to go on down and delete sub 11 so that something of value becomes a part of sub 10 and it's all one.
Pinball machine will be in legal sense a slot machine. So you don't really need to say slot machine or pinball.
Well, you have one problem in 10 because it requires it has to eject something of that rather than dispense, so that your free game doesn't eject that. The machine that dispenses it doesn't eject it.
Subsection 4.
Look at the last line.
Subsection 4.
Or is it any less a slot machine because apart from its use or adaptability as such, it may also sell or deliver something of value on a basis of its chance.
You didn't hit me with pinball and slot machine. The point is, though, you have defined, in Section 7, for example, you've defined just the possession of a slot machine is a crime. And in Subsection 2, you get at the, what you linked up, gambling device with consideration.
You link it up by sub 3, which means
of what?
Something of section 1. You define gambling to that the guy will receive something of value. Then something of value throws you over to 11, which brings in your free play. And then you couple that with 4, which is a gambling device, and you put all those together and you get to the pinball. It's a free play. That's how you get there. Sure it is.
Why don't you just say a slot machine or a pinball machine?
Well, you've got to add section 7. Well, but we haven't defined pinball machine in section 1. We have included it, but we haven't defined it.
That's right.
Look, pinball machine doesn't become illegal, which is, it isn't a separately defined thing. And these things aren't linked together until you get it, until it's been used.
Lee, let's see what the staff has to say, what their recommendation is on this. Don, do you have any?
Well, first of all, we were not trying to equate pinballs with slots. We weren't trying to include them in the same definition. As Judge Burns pointed out, the gambling device was meant to include pinball machines. And that is why that we had a separate sub 2 under section 7, so that if it is a pinball, you require the possession or the other activity that's set out here, plus requiring believing that the device is to be used in the advancement of unlawful gambling activity. So that the possession itself is not prohibited, the possession of a pinball machine.
Is not prohibited?
It's not.
Well, then, pinball machine is not illegal under this unless it's used for gambling.
Well, yeah, we get it under section 2.
Because of something of value, something of value includes a free play. That's where we get to McKee versus Foster. At least that's what we were trying to
do. We do it under section 2, right?
If the machine by its very nature has a free play on it, Then
it's a gambling device.
Then it's per se.
Right. It's a gambling device whether it has a free feature on it or not. You're not reading the deck of cards is included as a gambling device in this thing.
When so
used. It means any device, machine, paraphernalia, or equipment that is used or usable in the playing phases of any gambling activity. Activity consists of gambling by persons or gambling by a person involved in the playing of the machine. And the only way that this thing, the pinball machine, becomes illegal is when you go over to section 2. A person commits the crime of promoting gambling to second degree and not only promotes or profits.
No.
Where do you define unlawful gambling activity? Where do you make it unlawful?
We've defined gambling. And then we have defined unlawful to mean not specifically authorized by law.
How about that? Would you tell me how you make a pinball machine illegal under this thing?
Judge Burns, would you do it once more?
There are three definitions in here, and nowhere do they link together.
Would you please listen, Mr. Johnson?
Okay. A gambling device under 7 sub 2 is possession of it is illegal, believing it is used in advancement of unlawful gambling activity. Now, you look at section 1 sub 3, gambling means that the guy's going to get something betting. And so you look at sub 9, sub 11, something of value means a free play. So you put them all together and it spells mother.
That is an unlawful gambling. That defines gambling and it defines something of value. Where does it become unlawful?
Because gambling, which isn't authorized by law, is unlawful.
So that is a BRA for your own home to have a pinball machine.
Where is it? All right, then where is gambling authorized in my own home?
You want to have a pinball machine?
If I had a free play pinball machine in my home
to teach the kids how to count,
I could have it. But I couldn't have it in the tavern.
Wait a minute. This doesn't mean.
It's
to be used in the advancement of unlawful gambling activity. Now, where is gambling prescribed in these?
Well,
I told you, I'm not going to tell you again. I'll let Don tell you.
I don't think I can anything.
All right. There's one from the board over there.
Don's copying.
Yeah.
Would it help it, Lee, if under sub 3 of section 1 we used gambling activity rather than just gambling and define that as just gambling?
No, where I can't find is where you would define it. Unlawful. Where have you prescribed gambling? You prescribe. Now wait a minute. In section 2, you prescribe.
It's not where have you prescribed it to be unlawful. It's where have you said that it's legal. And if you haven't said that it's legal, somewhere it's unlawful.
I assume that if something is not prescribed by law, it is legal.
No, but they have. That's what they said. They define gambling. That's lawful in subsections 2 and 3.
Lee, I think there's a very important phone call for you. Would you like to step up for about 5 minutes and point Jacob's?
I think we got a real problem.
Well, we vote on this.
I second that motion.
For bringing Odell.
All right.
And you can write Jill on
it. Tell me where in here I'm going to play a poker game in my house. There's where does it prevent a poker game in my house?
If
it
doesn't prohibit it. If you're not making a profit on it.
It's gambling, isn't it? It's gambling.
Gambling is prohibited only when there's a profit made of it.
Commentary takes care of your house.
And it authorizes it.
No, but what's prohibited is promoting gambling in second degree or promoting gambling in the first degree.
No, it's promoting unlawful gambling. There's a difference.
Well, I mean, that's the title of the offense.
Yeah, but the wording the statute is it's unlawful gambling.
Right.
Well, we approve section 10 as amended. And the hands are cast in for any Douglas vote.
How did we amend it? God damn it, Bob. All right. I'll go ahead and vote for it. But I do think there's a real defect in drafting here.
Well,
I haven't had it satisfied yet for me. And
Don, isn't the rule that there are no crimes excepting what the statute says are crimes in Oregon?
Yeah.
So then we're
the statute.
Then we can go at it backwards like we're trying to do by saying it's only unlawful if we don't say it is lawful.
Well, we create the crime of gambling, but no way by saying that gambling is bad unless we say it's good.
Where did we say it's bad?
Where did we say it was good?
Is Lee's question.
Where did we say it was good? That's Don's question.
Burns Reddit.
So Penny Annie, where did we say it was
funny
good?
Somebody listen to me.
Maybe we can bring your phone call to Paul.
How about voting on Chandler's motion to delete found in the possession of any person violating the provisions of the article?
Well, I think that's innocuous enough. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Very.
May I ask another question on the definition of slot machine also? Does this mean that money has to be checked from? We got slot machines.
For instance, they didn't eject.
The bartender paid off based on what came up on
it. It says it may eject something of that. Doesn't say that it does.
That
may be too restrictive to me.
Mr. Chairman, as I look through this thing, and I am thoroughly confused, but I find the only place that we specifically outlaw gambling, in section 2, for example, we say that it is unlawful to promote or profit from unlawful gambling. So I assume, under that section then, unlawful means not specifically by authorized by law. Now what, under section 2, what happens to the private poker game in my house?
If you don't promote or profit, as we've defined, and we've defined profits as meaning that a person other than as a player, say, or he promotes, and there he has to be acting other than as a player. So that's where you are excluding the player who participates on equal terms with everybody else in a game. That is not either profiting or promoting.
Now, going back to this definition of slot machines,
The problem still remains that we have to get suitable language to crank in into 10 to provide the instruction of devices other than slot machines. And it occurs to me that we can make a policy decision about the staff leaving the board.
I agree.
That might be a good idea.
Because to recognize that if they become unlawful, they should be subject to seizure the same as slot machines.
Call for the question on Judge Burns' motion.
And so I would move that the staff be directed to draft appropriate language to equate the two
under
section
10. Don't run
off. Now, that shouldn't be objectionable. That
what did they say?
Fellas?
No.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Carried. And I might suggest to the staff
that you prescribe
go into the Lee Johnson question, because there's more merit in it than appears on the face. Because it isn't very damn clear here what...
Well, the other suggestion I would have, Mr. Chairman, is whether or not it is wise to list only the sheriff as the one with the duty to seize. Suppose another law enforcement officer comes along with the outlawed device, should he not also have the duty to seize it?
At least seize and deliver the sheriff.
Seize and deliver the sheriff. I agree that as far as the handling and destruction of mechanical phase, probably it's well centered in the sheriff's office. It seems to me if a city police officer or state police officer comes across such a device, he should have the duty to seize it.
Don, you were busy talking with Lee there. Did you get the import of what Judge Byrne said in rewriting this or looking it over? Provide that any law enforcement officer other than the sheriff, while he may not destroy it and turn the money over to the treasurer and so on, has the duty to seize the contraband, the slot machine or the pinball machine, and in turn turn it over to the sheriff rather than reporting to the sheriff that it's here and having the sheriff go get it. Is that it, Jim?
Well, I think I can state what my problem is. Look at section 2.
Page 6.
Well, I understand the term profit. Now, profit is defined as someone other than the player. Isn't that the guy we're trying to prescribe? That's what we're trying to prescribe here, so why do we have the word unlawful?
You mean the player we're trying to prescribe?
No, someone other than the player is the guy we're trying
to
get.
You got a profit from unlawful gambling activity, which I still don't understand what is unlawful gambling activity. It's what we're trying to prescribe is the guy who profits from gambling activity. Profit being defined as a person other than the player who accepts or receives money or other property from the agreement.
So you're assuming that if we strike the word unlawful from section 2, we'll still get all of the people we're after and not have any problem with the household guy and not have any problem we got going around the horn.
We'd be curious drafting here.
We'd be getting a lot of time for promotion or anything.
Well, Lee, I've already told Don to explore this position of yours.
Didn't we say it's legal to have a friendly game in
the commentary? Well, there wouldn't be any law prohibiting
because of our definition of
promoting
the property.
That's
what we think.
Somebody other than a player.
Mr. Chairman, I move we adopt Section 10 with the understanding that the staff see it as instructed.
When's the last time anybody's ever seen a private poker game across the field? This doesn't happen.
Well,
I think you're getting into real strange statutory convolutions over a problem that doesn't really exist.
Well, Jake, we've discussed that. You weren't here quite thoroughly. You were represented by the Attorney General.
Somebody mentioned the money.
Brief suggestion. You might say, Section 2 promotes for game. You're acting pro, high roller.
Well, he's got the word promotes.
Promotes for game.
Well, he's got promotes.
Promotes more profits.
Yeah, and Jake, we've defined both of those terms. Profits means that a person acting other than as a player accepts or receives money or other property.
Well, that's what I got for coming into the middle of something.
And then promotes means that also acting other than as a player, he aids any form of gambling activity. So,
I have another question too. There's a specific statute in narcotics, for instance, authorizing a person acting as a police agent and gives him immunity from prosecution. We would well consider that type of statute.
In one of the statutes we've adopted.
General.
Question on Judge Burns' motion that Section 10 be approved, subject to the correction or drafting of this problem that we're confronted with by the staff. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried. Now, we haven't adopted the definition section. Do you want to
I move we adopt the definition section subject to the changes in the
definition. You heard the motion.
Question.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Carry. Now,
except for what the staff has to do with the gambling, have we completed everything?
Mr. Chairman, I regret to bring it up to 10 after 5, but I would like to take this one a little bit of time because I won't be here tomorrow to simply report to you on this firearms thing.
Before you go into that, Senator Burns has an item that I think that we should consider shouldn't take very much time.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I have a letter here from Mr. Hazlitt, who represents the Christian Science Committee on Publication. And he was concerned about the statutes that we drew relating to offenses against the family.
Which is
Robert B. Hazlitt, H-A-Z-E.
Is that you, Mr. Hazlitt? Are you Mr. Hazlitt?
No, I'm just, I'm here listening for him, that's all.
Oh, all right.
But in any event, they were fearful that possibly under the child neglect statute or the contributing to the dependency of a minor statute that perhaps a Christian Science parent that didn't give medical treatment to the child would be subject to prosecution. And this came up in New York, and New York passed a specific statute giving immunity to Christian Science parents. Now, Mr. Fleck talked to Mr. Hazlitt, so did I, and we don't have the same statutes as New York, and I'm not sure that on any of the statutes that we passed today or any of the other ones, it would subject Christian Science parents to prosecution.
No,
something about in that section 8 on
it's in that section. Now, it would have, they would need the exception if we had perpetuated the contributing to the dependency statute, but we didn't. So I don't know, Mr. Chairman, we told him that we'd bring it up.
Let's see what Don Villette has to say about it.
Well, that's right. Now, New York has their statute on endangering the welfare of the child. Provides that one of the means of violating the statute is to fail or refuse to provide proper medical care. Now, we don't have that kind of language in our endangering statute. Although we call it endangering the welfare of the child, we have not picked up that New York language. And the exemption that New York provides is specifically directed at their section 260.1.10, and they say that if it's a prosecution based upon the failure to provide proper medical care, it's an affirmative defense that the defendant is either a parent, guardian, or other person legally charged with care and custody of the child, and is a member or adherent of an organized church or religious group, the tenets of which prescribe prayer as a principal treatment for illness, and treated or caused such an ill child to be treated in accordance with such tenets. Now, the only possibility where I think the question might arise would be under our non-support provisions, which include the failure to provide necessary medical care. It wouldn't be endangering the welfare, but it would be, you'd have to prosecute them for non-support in order for the question to even be brought up, I think, with respect to a Christian Science parent or something.
What about the manslaughter for the death of the child that resulted from the
That goes to one of the other articles.
I don't think that this New York exemption extends beyond the endangering welfare statute. In other words, I don't think that it applies to a manslaughter prosecution. I'd have to check that for sure.
Well, I mean,
check the New York.
We don't have anything that's ever given medical attention. Are we ruling out that method of manslaughter?
Mr.
Chairman?
Yes,
it seems to me we're getting into something to remember the commission hasn't had much chance to think about and talk about. Staff had really had some chance to do some work on it. I wonder if we could leave this matter for the time we meet again to discuss the grading and some of those things, put it on the agenda at that time, and staff could have a report for us on what the liabilities are under the New York statutes, which ones they've saved and which ones they've abandoned.
We haven't done anything.
No, I said
I don't think we do.
We don't have this specific statute that New York has.
And I don't
my
think
point was the only place where it might come up would be because under non-support we define support to include medical attention.
Yeah, but if I understand you to say that we have a general prosecution for non-support, something in addition to this medical business, and therefore we don't have the problem he's answered.
That's what I think. I don't think we need it.
Well, that's my opinion. I don't think we have the same problem that arose under the New York statute, because they specifically provided this was a means of violating a specific statute on endangering the child.
And that's their particular worry.
Yes.
All
right.
I think that's right. Manslaughter is something else,
Like I said, I would have to check the New York statute.
Well, will you check that out, and we'll leave it as it is for the time being, it being your opinion that we don't need that. Your research discloses that we do, we'll bring it up at the next meeting.
Now, Judge Burns, you have the floor on firearms.
Will we approve Judge Burns' motion?
Now, we, the those minutes. Maxine, you have the minutes.
Here you go.
We're going to finish the two-day meeting.
We have the minutes of that subject.
So, and Jim wants to tell you that tomorrow, we get started on our grading in his absence. As a subcommittee, we can't very well. And we'll be adjourned until Sunday.
Try and see what.
We adjourn today until Sunday.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Judge Burns.
I regret to have to report to you that our subcommittee wrestled honestly and diligently, but we just didn't get anywhere with the actual drafting of gun control legislation. And we ran into a number of very difficult problems. I would say probably the central problems were those involving the effective institution of a permit procedure, permit and registration procedure for the handguns, which are now out in the hands of people. The ancillary problems associated with it, including the Fifth Amendment problems. And also, similar problems with respect to the licensing of the long guns. And we ran into just terrible drafting problems. And I think it's fair to say we finally kind of, about 4:30 or 4 to 5, we just looked at one another and sort of said, well, I'm not sure you can get there from here. And I simply didn't realize that these problems existed. Don and Roger, I thought, did an excellent job in preparing the draft, but it was clear from comparing their draft and it was House Bill 1259, or whatever the number was, the Kennedy bill, they hadn't foreseen these problems either. And their draft didn't even speak to some. And so the upshot is, we don't have a draft for you, and I must say that I'm not at all sure that we come up with any kind of a draft that's very decent. Comparison of Massachusetts and New Jersey shows they have extremely complicated legislation. And some of these problems, even those conflict statutes, miss or don't really hit the problem head on. So I'd ask Don to supplement that. We just didn't make any progress, I'm sorry.
Don?
Well, since the subcommittee meeting, Mr. Chairman, we have obtained some additional materials Don Clark, for example, obtained a copy of another uniform proposal, which we haven't had an opportunity to take a look at. We examined, in preparing the subcommittee draft, we examined the New Jersey statutes, New Jersey being the one state that's cited most often as a good example of a gun control legislation, and also Massachusetts, both of which are extremely complex statutes, and attempted to, within the framework of the direction the commission gave us, provide for a draft that would do two things. Number one, that it would register all handguns. Number two, that would provide for licensing of all gun owners of both handguns and long guns. And we had between the time of the commission meeting and the subcommittee meeting, we had a week in which to prepare and get the draft ready. So I'm certainly not advising the commission that we can't do this. It's just a question of our time problems that we faced in getting a chance to examine as many different options and alternatives as there are available. Now, undoubtedly, there are other materials that we can dig out and attempt to answer some of the questions that did come up. But our problem is that we're hung up on this, and our basic firearms draft is languishing in the subcommittee. That is the draft that did not include gun control legislation. But we wanted the commission to members to have an opportunity to see what some of the discussion was in the subcommittee. So we have copies of the minutes of that meeting we had the other day ready for you today. And you may want to look these over, and then maybe we can discuss this further. But frankly, like the judge says, we found too many questions that none of us had any answers for.
Do you think you have got part any question of time before you can arrive at some solution to these problems? Or do you think the problems you see them now appear somewhat insoluble?
Well, I wouldn't go so far as to say they're insoluble. I think they're extremely difficult questions.
Is this another matter then that could be? I don't know, Chairman, I don't know what your intent and schedule planning is. You know, have to meet again. Drafting the grading subcommittee is really important. I don't know how far off you think this is, whether there'll be time for the staff to work on this problem between now and then, or what.
Well, what I was wondering, Mr. Chairman, was this. Now, I realize that the commission has already adopted a policy decision with respect to incorporating this within the code itself. And because we've gotten to this at such a late date, and the rest of our substantive code is essentially completed, except for the grading provisions, if we could maybe reconsider, the commission could reconsider this question and possibly recognizing that the commission wants this kind of legislation, if we can handle this as a separate proposal to give us time to enable us, first of all, to move ahead with the rest of our code, and secondly, then to give us time to prepare something that would attempt to meet some of the questions.
Mr. Chairman.
John.
As I understand it, we have the grading and we have the section on miscellaneous offenses, which remain for commission action and which really aren't going to take very long. And hopefully we're going to be able to accomplish that within the next 2 to 3 weeks and send the substantive code out to the printer and anticipate that it'll be back printed and ready for distribution, certainly hopefully by 15th of June. Right?
No, the 1st of July.
All right. Why couldn't we, and then in the meantime, between, say, the 1st of May and the 1st of July, you'll be gearing up to start on the procedural code, and we'll be proceeding modestly, subcommittee by subcommittee, if possible, in procedure, right? Why couldn't we, Mr. Chairman, not to impede the progress of the staff and the deadline that we have on the printing and all that, why couldn't we put in the printed code a blank article reserved for firearms, you know, so that people reading that are going to, in the printed, will see that this is going to be a part of it, and then let you give you some time to do it separately. And then handle it as a separate project.
We go so far as to say in there what our policy is.
Yeah.
State the policy on the blank article. General policy determination was made to do two things.
To confine it to handguns.
Confine the hand licensing of.
I'll find the registration license of handguns and the licensing to all
guns.
Well, we may be spinning our wheels unless the majority of the commission feels that they want a specific article on licensing and registration, whether it be of handguns or long guns, in our code. I know that there are several that have talked to me and feel that we shouldn't even do anything with this and allow the legislature to introduce whatever legislation it wants at the next session. Now, if it develops that there are a majority of the commission don't want to do anything at this time for fear that it may interfere with our schedule we'll just be spinning our wheels to do that. So first, I think that we should determine here today whether or not we want to proceed with this thing.
Well, Chairman, I would like to raise, I know we voted on this last time. I think it certainly is one matter to justify being treated separately. Without question, it involves setting up some kind of administrative framework. And it means it's a matter that's going to have to go to Ways and Means. It seems to me, we decided to continue with it.
Mr. Chairman, maybe the way to do that would be to get a move to reaffirm our previous policy.
Why do we have to write a statute on it, or whatever it's worth? We tell the legislature we think this is what you ought to do.
Well, we might do that. That might solve it. Well, I thought that you had in mind.
I think we're better able to do it.
Well, I
kind of
did have in mind.
I don't want to come out with a policy statement either. Let's come out with a specific provision.
I wouldn't recommend that because if the legislature, as a matter of policy, agrees with it, somebody's going to have to do that work, the drafting work. And I, all due respect to staff of the legislature, I don't think they're as well equipped as we are.
Right.
And also, they make it consistent with other provisions of the whole criminal code. But it's just darn hard work, and it's going to take quite a while to do it.
Well, and there's one other consideration. This is going to apparently have to involve the state police department in a very substantial fashion. We're going to be imposing upon that department some very heavy burdens, we really need to have an opportunity, I think, to try to work out some of these problems with the state police.
Don had asked somebody from the state police to be here at our subcommittee meeting.
I checked with them later, and there was a huge problem
somewhere, whether the state police or the sheriff's office or the city Texas or someplace else. It's going to be a substantial problem somewhere.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if we follow the suggestion to treat this separately and we go to the 1971 legislature with a proposed revised substantive code, we're going to have all those sections from chapter 161 through chapter 169. Everything's completely repealed and everything's new, except we're probably going to have to take chapter 166 in its entirety and stick it in there. So it seems to me that within the concept of a comprehensively revised criminal code, we're going to have to meet this problem as a part of this commission's work. And I recognize the difficulty of it and the time that's going to be.
Do you want to have a special full commission meeting on this subject alone?
Not such a stage as we are right now.
Well, Mr. Chairman, maybe the best way to solve this. But I assume that the full commission is going to be meeting.
Pass on our grading.
2 or 3 weeks or 4 weeks or something, relatively soon on the grading. And probably the best thing to do is, in the meantime, the subcommittee will keep working on it, report its progress at that time. I don't know, maybe that's.
Yeah,
that's about all you can do.
Yeah,
that's all move.
You've heard the motion. Is there any further discussion? Don? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried. Well, you required some more work, Jim.
Now, if I get out of here before Colette shoots me.
Mr. Chairman, do we meet again tomorrow now?
Handguns.
No, we won't have any occasion to meet again tomorrow.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to adjourn.
Meeting adjourned.
I think we've got it all pretty well gathered up.
It was salty night.